हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 79. Their bodies became so tall that they seemed to kiss the sky with the crests of their golden crowns. They blocked the view of all directions, and while walking, shook the earth at every step. Their arms were adorned with brilliant bracelets, and they stood as if covering the sun with their waists, which were bound with excellent and beautiful girdles. Kasyapa, Prajapati, the creator of the living entities, gave his twin sons their names. The one who was born first, he called Hiranyaksha, and the one who was first conceived by Diti, he named Hiranyakashipu. The elder child, Hiranyakashipu, was unafraid of death from anyone within the three worlds, because he received a benediction from Lord Brahma. He was proud and puffed up due to this benediction, and was able to bring all three planetary systems under his control. 17 to 19. In his purport to verse 18, Srila Prabhupada offers a Vedic scientific perspective. There is an authoritative Vedic literature called Pindasiddhi, in which the scientific understanding of pregnancy is very nicely described. Because the Vedas, and there's books on all these little details, like that, depending upon where it is that there's nothing that somebody didn't write some book about just one aspect. So much is there. The difficulty is that it's all in, you know, Sanskrit and in manuscripts. And either the ants eat them or, you know, the grandchildren throw them out or, you know, some library buys them or some publisher buys them and never publishes them. You know, so in this way, there's so much there. That's the thing, the Vedic literature, there's nothing that's not explained. But the point is these are just the material mechanical details that they're explaining. So the most important elements, the spiritual, those things are going on because the Vaishnavas see that that happens. Then however much of other things can be maintained, that's good. It is stated that when the male secretion enters the menstrual flux in the uterus in two successive drops, the mother develops two embryos in her womb, and she brings forth twins in a reverse order to that in which they were first conceived. The child conceived first is born later, and the one conceived later is brought forth first, right? Because the first one is in first, so that means the second one is in front. So when they're born, the second one is born first. So generally now, what we say is there's twins. The firstborn we say is the elder, but actually they're the younger. Like that. So, yeah. The first child conceived in the womb lives behind the second child, so when the birth takes place, the second child appears first, and the first child appears second. In this case, it is understood that Hiranyaksha, the second child conceived, was delivered first, whereas Hiranyakashipu, the child who was behind him, having been conceived first, was born second. From the purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the same verse, the Pindasiddhi says, when a person impregnates semen twice in the womb, the two embryos are born in reverse order to the impregnation. End quote. Hiranyakashipu was the eldest from the perspective of Kasyapa, since he had been deposited first. From the perspective of the mother, Hiranyaksha was eldest, since he was born first from her womb. though either could be considered elder, because the stronger position of the father, Hiranyakashipu, was considered the elder. Right, so like that. So now it's, you know, so, is that, yeah. Verses 20 to 28, Hiranyaksha shows his splendor. Hiranyaksha took his club in his hand and began terrorizing the universe for the pleasure of his elder brother. Right? That's interesting. That makes your elder brother happy. Right? His elder brother Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyaksha journeyed to the ocean. He disturbed the aquatics and smote the ocean waves with his club, challenging Varunadev for battle. His younger brother, Hiranyaksha, was always ready to satisfy his elder brother by his activities. Hiranyaksha took a club on his shoulder and traveled all over the universe with a fighting spirit just to satisfy Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyaksha's temper was difficult to control. He had anklets of gold tinkling about his feet. He was adorned with a gigantic garland, and he rested his huge mace on one of his shoulders. Right, so you see in the Vedic is that strength was a mentality. So it's not that he's wearing ankle bells, so now he's effeminate. Right? No, you could go ahead and try to make a comment if you want, but you know, Mr. Metro here will hit you over the head with his club, so it's not, so don't bother, right? You know?
Maharaj?
Yes.
It's interesting to know that he was trying to satisfy his brother, but not his father. Because usually sons, they're trying to satisfy the father.
Well, because the father has a problem of being, you know, kind of stuck in that archaic concept of the mode of goodness. You know? His brother's, you know, more up to date with passion and ignorance. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, hey, come on, get with it.
Connection.
Yeah. So they seem to be very independent. Yeah, that's the interesting thing. You know, other than this, they're being born and given names, you know, and the mother worrying about them, you never actually hear about any interaction. Because that's, you know, whatever is there, that's not the important element. But, you know. But at least it shows, as siblings, they had a good relationship, right? You know, so at least that's something to, you know, emulate.
All right.
Yes.
There's a different way, too. They live in the subterranean heavenly and
they would have been born on these on Mahar, but from that it seems that they would just move around as they please. Because okay. I think Hiranyakashipu would take over Indra's place. Because it's meant for sense gratification. Because as we see as the chapters go on, it talks more and more about the demoniac mentality. It's just about sense gratification. It means, in other words, that if there's an opportunity for sense gratification, the demoniac mentality sees that that's all that there is. The demigod mentality is how to connect it to Krishna. It doesn't mean that the senses aren't engaged, because when we think of demigods, we think of those who definitely like to engage the senses. But it will be in line with what's pleasing to the Lord. While the demons, it's just what's pleasing to them. Like that. But you'll see is that some of the more knowledgeable demons will follow Shastra, but their whole point of that is just it's another opportunity for sense gratification. It's not that it's the Supreme Lord's order, that's why I do it this way. It's no, this is the way you get more sense gratification. Is that? Yeah, so they'll set themselves up wherever is the best sense gratification, that's all. The best power, the best opulence, best sense gratification. So we see in some of the pastimes that Hiranyakashipu set himself up here on earth, other times in Indra's place. So, you know, it's just, you know, variety is there. You know, it's just, you know, different flavors. You know. His mental and bodily strength, as well as the boon conferred upon him, made him proud. Right? So they had the boon that no one could kill them, right? Because, you know, they had a specific boon. You know, no man, no demigod, you know, no animal, no, you know, not inside, not outside, not in the day, not in the night. So it sounds like you've covered everything. But what they forget is combinations. Right? You know, they forgot about chutney. What'd they kill him with? with a bowl of chutney. Yeah, you know, so these combinations, they don't think about it.
So they had this before, before you are naturally.
It means before this is happening. So, I mean, there's more stories, but it's you're only bringing out what's in connection with. It means the story was about Swayambhuva Manu, right? So the creation is going on. So when Manu appears, then he's going to perform his duties. But now, how does Manu do his duties if there's no earth to perform his duties with? So then Varahadev appears, takes the earth out of the water. But in the meantime, Hiranyaksha somehow or another decided he is, you know, it's his earth. And so then there's a fight. So then the question is about the fight and how it came about and all that kind of thing. So then, is that?
Yeah.
So other stories of how they went and did austerity, that will come in later.
Right.
You know, later we'll get that again, I think, seventh canto. Then we'll hear about all those aspects. But here it's more about Hiranyaksha and just their appearance and that kind of aspect. So because of that, he was proud. So that's the thing. The demons, when they get some material facility, they become proud. Because it's all about sense gratification. It's all about themselves. Well, the demigod mentalities, they have a boon. They have blessings. They know it's by the grace of the other person. So then the tendency is to try to avoid being proud. It's not that it always works. Indra also, you know, sometimes becomes very proud. But it never works out good. We always see if someone becomes proud, it never works out good. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, I mean, if you're 3 years old and you say something interesting in a proud way, okay, that works out. But if you're a little bigger, it just never works out. He feared death at the hands of no one, and there was no checking him. The gods, therefore, were seized with fear at his very sight, and they hid themselves, even as snakes hide themselves for fear of Garuda. On not finding Indra and the other demigods, who had previously been intoxicated with power, the chief of the Daityas, seeing that they had all vanished before his might, roared loudly. After returning from the heavenly kingdom, the mighty demon, who was like an elephant in wrath, for the sake of sport, dived into the deep ocean, which was roaring terribly. On his entering the ocean, the aquatic animals who formed the host of Varuna were stricken with fear and ran far away. Thus Hiranyaksha showed his splendor without dealing a blow. Moving about in the ocean for many, many years, the mighty Hiranyaksha smote the gigantic wind-tossed waves again and again with his iron mace and reached Vibhavari, the capital of Varuna. Vibhavari is the home of Varuna, lord of the aquatic creatures and guardian of the lower regions of the universe, where the demons generally reside. There Hiranyaksha fell at Varuna's feet like a low-born man, and to make fun of him he said with a smile, "Give me battle, O Supreme Lord. You are the guardian of an entire sphere and a ruler of wide fame. Having crushed the might of arrogant and conceited warriors and having conquered all the Daityas and Danavas in the world, you once performed a Rajasuya sacrifice to the Lord." 20-28. Srila Prabhupada comments. The demoniac person always challenges others and tries to occupy others' property by force. Here these symptoms are fully displayed by Hiranyaksha, who begged war from a person who had no desire to fight. And so he's done so great, he's showed his prowess now because he's proud of his prowess. He wants to therefore comment, okay, if I defeat this person, that makes me the best. Right? They already know they're the best, they just want to, you know, make sure, rub it in a bit. Right? So that's the point, is that no one's challenging them. It's another thing, someone challenges you. So the culture thing is you just do what you're doing. Then if someone challenges, then there may be a fight. But here it's just, for no reason, there's no need to fight, they just come and make trouble. So that's the demoniac mentality. Verses 29-31. Varuna waxes angry. The demigod avoided Hiranyaksha's prideful words, telling him to seek Vishnu, who would fight with him and kill him. Thus mocked by an enemy whose vanity knew no bounds, the worshipable lord of the waters waxed angry. But by dint of his reason, he managed to curb the anger that had sprung up in him. He replied, "O dear one, We have now desisted from warfare, having grown too old for combat. You are so skilled in war that I do not see anyone else but the most ancient person, Lord Vishnu, who can give satisfaction in battle to you. Therefore, O chief of the Asuras, approach him, whom even heroes like you mention with praise. Varuna continued, on reaching him, you will be rid of your pride at once, and will lie down on the field of battle, surrounded by dogs, for eternal sleep. It is in order to exterminate wicked fellows like you, and to show his grace to the virtuous, that he assumes his various incarnations like Varaha. 29-31. In his purports, Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur relates this conversation between the demon and Lord Varaha, and Lord Varuna. Hiranyaksha, how will I be relieved of my desire for battle? Varunadev, therefore, O best of demons, you should go to Vishnu, whom warriors such as you praise as the person who can relieve the itch for battle. Hiranyaksha, how long will it take to reach him? Varunadev, very quickly. In 5 days you can meet him. Stripped of your pride, you will lie down to sleep. Now afflicted by the sickness of pride, you do not sleep, agitated with the desire to fight. Where the warriors lie down is the battlefield. That will be your suitable bed. You will have people to care for your limbs. The dogs will surround you. Hiranyaksha, if that is so, then please tell me the form of the Lord. Searching inside and outside the universe, on finding him, I will fight with him. How can he kill me? Varunadev, you will see. For destroying the wicked, he assumes forms such as Varaha or Nrisingha. I know in general, but I do not know what particular form he will kill you. Right? You know, so because it's presented in that context, then the warrior becomes inspired. Right? You know, because he's a great fighter. So if there's someone greater than, because they respect prowess. So if someone's greater prowess, then it's not a problem. You just don't want to be killed by someone with less prowess. Right? You know. Does that make sense? You know. That would be a real problem, you know. You're out there and you're walking across the street and you're run over by an old lady in a walker. You know, that would really go down bad. Right? You know. So okay. Chapter 18. The battle between Lord Bor and Hiranyaksha. Pratigya. Materialistic warmongers are not afraid to fight with their mightiest enemy, the personality of Godhead. The Pratigya of this chapter is stated in the excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 1. The demon was very encouraged to learn from Varuna that there was one fighter who could actually combat him, and he was very enthusiastic to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to give him a fight. Because they have this prowess, they want to use it. You know, they want to show their prowess. So that's the difficulty, is that when they get these boons that they're the most powerful and no one can defeat them, then who do you fight with? Right? Kartavirya Arjuna was the same. He had 1,000 arms. You know? And so who can fight with him? Or Banasura, he also has 1,000 arms. Right? So no one can fight with him. So in frustration, Banasura would go and find a mountain and just beat it with his fist until it was just dust. You know, but that's, you know, okay, you show the strength, but it's not like there's any, it's not like the mountain uses any particular moves or something. You know, so that's the thing, is that they appreciate this. So then, this is the problem. They've gotten the boon, and now all the demigods, everybody runs away, so there's no one to fight. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it'd be like, let's say, you're the best tennis player in the world, but no one will play tennis with you, or, you know, like that. So what do? You're the best driver in the world, no one will drive. So that's the thing. Whatever you're good at, no one will challenge you. You know? So the idea that someone could defeat you, that means they're good. But they'll always think, I'll win. Right? But just the idea that they have the prowess to defeat you means then there's some equality. Because I can defeat them, of course. So if they can defeat me, then it makes it equal. Now it's a good fight. Right? So it's just
Riti. The Lord enjoys the words of bravado, which were exchanged because, as explained by Sridhar Swami's commentaries to verses 3 and 4, quote, that although the demon wanted to deride the personality of Godhead in the form of a boar, Actually, he worshipped him in several words. For example, he addressed him as Vanagochara, which means one who is a resident of the forest. But another meaning of Vanagochara is one who lies on the water. According to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport to verse 9, quote, he was angry because of hearing the abusive words of the demon, and laughed on hearing the other meaning of the words, which were praised. End quote. Srila Prabhupada points out in the following three purports the response of the Lord to his enemy's challenges. When the Lord was coming out of the water, taking the earth in his arms to deliver it, the demon derided him with insulting words. But the Lord did not care because he was very conscious of his duty. Right? So he won't stop his duty because of somebody's insulting him. He'll do his duty. And when that's finished, then after that, then you can come back and deal with the... Because otherwise you stop then, the duty doesn't get done, so what's the glory? Now, you're trying to maintain your position, but your position is glorious because of what you do. Right? So first do things properly, then deal with these obstacles. For a dutiful man, there's nothing to fear. Similarly, those who are powerful have no fear of derision or unkind words from an enemy. The Lord had nothing to fear from anyone. Yet he was merciful to his enemy by neglecting him. Although apparently he fled from the challenge, it was just to protect the earth from calamity that he tolerated Hiranyaksha's deriding words. Seventh purport. Right, so it's his kindness on him that he didn't just kill him on the spot, because he could do it. But, because he wants to fight and challenge, so therefore, it should be done properly. Because otherwise, it really upsets the person, that they come to fight with you, and you're sitting there drinking your tea and with one hand fighting them. And that really annoys me. Right? So that's not kind. Thy kind is a proper full fight, right? The Lord could have chastised the demon immediately while the demon was deriding the Lord with ill words. But the Lord tolerated him to please the demigods and to show that they should not be afraid of demons while discharging their duties, right? So that's the other thing. You're doing your duties, don't worry about others. Get it done. Right? Then after that, the demons can be dealt with. Therefore, his toleration was displayed mainly to drive away the fears of the demigods, who should know that the Lord is always present to protect them. Ninth purport. The Mayavadi philosopher cannot understand that the Lord has feelings. The Lord is satisfied if someone offers him a nice prayer. And similarly, if someone decries his existence or calls him by ill names, God is dissatisfied. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is decried by the Mayavadi philosophers, who are also demons. They say that God has no head, no form, no existence, and no legs, hands, or other bodily limbs. In other words, they say that he is dead or lame. All these misconceptions of the Supreme Lord are a source of dissatisfaction to him. He is never pleased with such atheistic descriptions. Because it's just not natural for the living entity to behave like this. It's not natural in the relationship. It's like saying... the family, it doesn't go well, and then you say that, this family member doesn't exist. Someone says, so what about your sister? I don't have a sister. What do you mean you don't have a sister? What about her? She's not my sister. So that's dissatisfying, right? Because it's not natural. It's not the position.
So can we say that demons even better than Mayavadis? Because at least
the Lord, at least he's saying he's just a forest animal. So at least that's better. It mentions that even the smartest who respect that he has a form, at least in the mode of goodness, is better than ones that says there's no form at all. Right? So at least they accept there's a form. Or let's say like your modern monotheist, they say he's a person. But then at the same time, they say he has no form. So that aspect, they say he's a person, that's better than the aspect they say he has no form. Then that's not very satisfying. So something that you're getting closer to the truth is always better. It's a step in the right direction. Though, it's without proper knowledge or proper understanding. But as I said before, you can't have that unless you actually get that from devotees, you know, by the grace of the Lord. If you actually want to know, Krishna will put you in contact, then you can learn, then you can know. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 18th chapter describes a conversation between the demon and Varaha, Brahma's fear and a battle using clubs. Hiranyaksha did not heed Varuna's words of warning. He begins seeking Vishnu within the ocean. There he finds the Lord lifting the earth upwards at the end of his tusk. The demon challenges Varahadev, threatening to kill him and so end all sacrifices. Now, because he knows the Brahmins do all these sacrifices to please Vishnu. So if you get rid of Vishnu, then what's the point of the sacrifices? So then the whole Brahminical culture disappears. Right? You know, so, you know, it's simple. You know, just that. Very direct, very practical. Right? The Lord was pained by the abusive words of the demon, but he carefully places the earth upon the water before replying with great anger. Hiranyaksha struck the Lord with his mace, and a fierce fight begins. Brahma arrives, and noting that night was approaching, he requests the Lord to kill the demon without delay. Shloka Anushara 1-7. The abusive words of the demon, 8-12. After securing the earth, the Lord expresses his terrible anger. 13-19. Hiranyaksha and the Lord strike each other. 21-28. Brahma addresses Narayana. 1-7, the abusive words of the demon. The demon challenges Varahadev, threatening to kill him and to end all sacrifices. The Lord carefully places the earth upon the water before replying with great anger. Sri Maitreya continues his answer to Vidura. Quote, the proud and falsely glorious Daitya paid little heed to the words of Varuna. Vidura, he learned from Narada the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and hurriedly betook himself to the depths of the ocean. Right, so he didn't take so much seriously what Varuna was saying, so he goes to Narad Muni, because they know Narad Muni, he always tells the truth and everything, and knows about the Lord, because he worships the Lord. So he goes to Varuna, so he's approaching a bona fide authority to find where is the Lord. So by the grace of Narad Muni, then he's able to actually see the Lord. Right? So, you know, technically, it's the proper path of self-realization. Just his motive wasn't what you'd call ideal. Right? You know? After once again entering the depths of the ocean, Hiranyaksha saw the all-powerful Supreme Lord in his boar incarnation bearing the earth upwards, while keeping her on the ends of his tusks. Upon seeing the Lord, the demon laughingly exclaimed, quote, an amphibious beast, end quote. The demon addressed the Lord, O best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. This earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. Right, because it's dropped down into the Garbhodak ocean, so that's in the lower planetary area. So now he's saying, now it's ours. Right? You know, if it's up, then, you know, the demigods can say they're in control, but it's down here, so we're in control. Right? So you're not going to be able to take it without, you know, getting hurt. Yes?
It means that the lower planetary systems are inside the water.
No, they're above the water, but it's just that's their area.
So whatever is below, that's there also.
It's just like this. If you have the demigods and they connect with the earth, and then you have the lower planets, and so if the earth drops down here, then they're superior, so now they're in control.
You have been nourished by your enemies to kill us. Oh, you have been nourished by our enemies to kill us, means the demigods, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. O fool, your power is only mystic. So today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you. Footnote 10. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the alternative meaning. I will completely destroy the suffering of material existence of my friends, since you liberate even the friends of those who remember you. O Lord, you show satisfaction with the fools by giving them your bhakti. Right, so
he's the, everyone who's connected to him, now by him being graced by the Lord, then whoever's connected with him will also be graced. So that's the alternative meaning that Vishnu Chakravarti is giving. Because it's always these demons, since they're coming, they are giant Vijay, so they're devotees. So what they're saying sounds like insult, but actually it's praise.
When you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist, like trees without roots. And so
he's just explained how the Lord is the root of all the Brahmins, the sages, sacrifice, all these auspicious things. So if you get rid of the root, all this disappears.
1-5. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada expresses the demons' mentality. Demons are very much disturbed when devotees worship the Lord in the prescribed ways recommended in the scriptures. In the Vedic scriptures, the neophyte devotees are advised to engage in 9 kinds of devotional service, such as to hear and chant the holy name of God, to remember him always, to chant on beads, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Not so quick this time. To worship the Lord in the form of the deity incarnation in the temples, and to engage in various activities of Krishna consciousness to increase the number of godly persons for perfect peace in the world. Demons do not like such activity, right? So increase the number of godly persons for perfect peace in the world. So that's how peace will come about. It's not by managerial arrangements, economic arrangements, or you know, political arrangements, but it's going to be by increasing the number of godly people. When there's more godly people, it's more peaceful. But people talk about the peacefulness out in, you know, more simple life and everything like that, because people are more God-conscious then. That was the real reason. So it wasn't so much that they're living out in the country. That is the more ideal place. But it's because they're godly by character. Because otherwise, then you see these cities like Dwarka, or like the South Indian king, or now this the king that they went to in the district close to, on the Ganga near Mathura. Then also the whole city, they're all God conscious. It's all peaceful and very quiet. So the point is, God consciousness is what makes peace, right? That will actually generate peace. And so that means also for the individual, if we engage in God consciousness, then we'll become peaceful. No?
It's just in history.
I'm just thinking, no, but because they're supposedly God conscious, they've been killing each other for 4,000 years, right? So
jihad.
Yes, but you see, is there's peace because there's this really nice God-conscious fence right down the middle. And all the nice God-conscious Hummers that are going up and down the road. And because they're actually not God-conscious. The reason is the reason that they're fighting is not because this is something that pleases God, is because the guys on that side of the fence, you know, killed my uncle or my brother. You know, and the ones on that side say the same here. So it just goes back, you know.
So it's not about God, it's about myself.
It's about themselves. It means there is a somewhat religious sentiment, but it's not actually what are their duties. If they're actually God conscious, what are their duties? All right, and to kill everybody else, that doesn't seem to be. Why would God create them if they're just for you to kill or something like that? It's just, he's so kind or something. You know? You know, is this like a Borat thing here or something? You know, you have these, you know, little duck things that you shoot at like that. But if you have real people running around, that's so much nicer. You know, the whole point is, you know, God can get rid of, you know, how you say, what was that? What was the city?
Sodom.
Yes, Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, turn everybody into salt. Salt's useful, right? You know, okay, you know. So then. So then why is it that they have to go around and create so much trouble? You know? So that's the thing. And then And how did Jericho fall? Yeah, no. But I'm saying, for 7 days they went around blowing the shofars and chanting their mantras and stuff like that. So they were just being God conscious, and then it. So that's the way to do it, you know. So what they're doing here is just, they're saying it's that, but it's not. That's the problem. So because of that, then these ways religion gets a bad name. But technically, religion means manamoy. But what they're functioning at is pranamoy. Yeah. So that's the difficulty. Pranamoy is not enough to secure a consistent, sustainable, cooperative society. Because the problem is since it's all about self-interest that you're cooperating together, the self-interests are different. So even if you have people cooperating together, they're cooperating. On this side of the wall, they're cooperating together. On that side of the wall, they're cooperating together. You know? So that's the problem. But when it's based on manamoy, then you're following actually the laws. So then you have duties that you're supposed to follow. And you'll see all scriptures will be basically saying the same duties. So it's not that they can say as well, you know, we can't follow those. No, you follow your own. Is that? Yeah. Because you saw before, the Ottomans, they didn't have any problem with all varieties of religions. They were known. Because the technical name, I think Islam or either Muslim, one of them means basically broad-minded. Right? It's just Arabic for Catholic. So they were like that, but then, like the Germans, when they, you know, they have their pride and their empire, when it fell, they have to blame somebody, right? So the Germans, then it was the Jews, and for the, you know, Islam, it's a Western culture, you know, Jews get involved anyway. So does that make sense? So then you get that whole, it's political, it's not actually, because if you talk to those who are more scholars in this, then they won't say that this is the methodology. So it's more just nation. You know, it's not that we're, you know, the thing is no, we want to sit down here next to the ocean and be able to practice our God consciousness and all that. It's not about that. You know, we want this piece of land to be called ours. That's all. Yeah. Yeah. Huh? So if people are more God conscious, all that'll go away. They are always envious of God and his devotees. Their propaganda not to worship in the temple or church, but simply to make material advancement for satisfaction of the senses is always current. Right, so no matter what it is, that's all they're saying. So all these different materialistic philosophies, they're all saying this. They just have different approaches how to get it done. Right? So just like, let's say we discuss cooking. Okay? Will everyone in the world... Okay, leaving out people who don't know how to cook and the back of their neck is quite, you know, sunburned. Okay, so then, you know, is Chinese cooking? Yes. Okay, what about Indian, Mexican, continental, Middle Eastern? Okay, yeah, so in the cooking way, it's all cooking. Though the approach and everything and the tastes are very different. But somehow or another in these others, this is religion, everything else is not. So that's the thing, is the Vedic is always talking about what's the eternal element that's common. Then you may have different ways to express it. But that's the difficulty, is they don't understand the common elements or the actual eternal principles. Because based on that, that's common to all religions. So So that's the point here. So therefore, all these mundane philosophies, they're all based on about not dealing so much with God, but about the senses. If you want to throw God into the mix, great, as long as that will generate satisfaction of the senses. You know, it's all right if you want to pray to God, as long as, you know, your son passes the exam and gets and becomes a doctor and you have, you know, millions of dollars, then great, fine, do it. But the point is to get the money and enjoy yourself. That's the whole point. It's not about God. Does that make sense? Yeah? The demon Hiranyaksha, upon seeing the Lord face to face, wanted to make a permanent solution by killing the personality of Godhead with his powerful mace. The example of an uprooted tree mentioned here by the demon is very significant. Devotees accept that God is the root of everything. Their example is that just as the stomach is the source of energy of all the limbs of the body, God is the original source of all energy manifested in the material and spiritual worlds. Therefore, as supplying food to the stomach is the process to satisfy all the limbs of the body, Krishna consciousness, or developing love of Krishna, is the sublime method for satisfying the source of all happiness. The demon wants to uproot this source because if the root, God, were to be checked, the activities of the Lord and the devotees would automatically stop. The demon would be very much satisfied by such a situation in society. Right? They don't understand that then, you know, everything dries up. You take the root of the tree, they don't understand that they're also, you know, a branch or a twig. You know? But they somehow or another think they're independent and separate. But they forget they had to go to Brahma to get the boon. Where does Brahma get his power? Right? So. The demons are always anxious to have a godless society for their sense gratification. Because if there's God, you can't just do whatever you like. Right, because you need variety. So whatever you're doing today, you have to do something else tomorrow. So you have to change it. You have to turn it upside down to give some taste, some flavor. Right? Does that make sense? There's always in society something that shouldn't be done. Right? And so then that gives the taste, pushing the limits of that. And it's just like, how you say, nowadays the dress codes that people, you know, the more liberal dress codes that people follow are actually more conservative than the codes that were there, you know, back in the 1700s and stuff like that. It wasn't, you know, it's like in, it was said in the French court, you know, if the women walked around topless, it wasn't a problem. You know, these things, it was very different kind of thing. So with the Victorian age, then all these things, you know, how you say, you know, just your eyes sticking out. So, you know, then we're complaining, oh, what about the burkas? It's like, you know, hey, come on. So this kind of thing is there. So it's just something to push the edge. Because whatever was there, you didn't do something else. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So there's always going to be something, because that's always the thing, is I'm getting away with something, I'm doing something more, I'll get more out of this, because it creates and generates some excitement. So that's the difficulty, is so the demons always like a godless civilization, because then I can do whatever I like, because if there's God, there's rules, right? That's automatic, right? It's not that God's just there and doesn't do anything, right? He's there. There's got to be rules, and so if there's rules, that means I have to follow them, and I don't like to follow them. Right? So all material philosophies will have this element. That's the first thing. They always have to attack God. So, yeah. According to Sridhar Swami, this verse means that when the demon would be deprived of his mace by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only the neophyte devotees, but also the ancient sagacious devotees of the Lord would be very much satisfied. Right? Because he'll throw his mace, so then he won't have it anymore. So when he can't fight and do these things, then everybody will be happy. Right? That's the underlying meaning. Although the Lord is pained by the shaft-like abuses of the demon, he bore the pain. Footnote 11. Or according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, verse 6 can mean, The Lord was pained by compassion, seeing the pain in Brahma and others who heard these words. He was victorious by the happiness gained through the praise uttered by the enemy. He was like an elephant emerging from the water, uninjured by a crocodile. But seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusks was frightened, he rose out of the water just as an elephant emerges with its female companion when assailed by an alligator. The demon, who had golden hair on his head, right? Because in the water, the crocodile is stronger, or the alligator is stronger. But on land, the elephant is stronger. So just, he comes out. But the point is they come out in a very regal and powerful way. It's not that they're, you know, essentially the elephant skipping on top of the water, you know, to get out. The demon, who had golden hair on his head and fearful tusks, gave chase to the Lord while he was rising from the water, even as an alligator would chase an elephant. Roaring like thunder, he said, "Are you not ashamed of running away before a challenging adversary? There is nothing reproachable. There is nothing reproachable for shameless creatures." Right. So here and now, he's calling into play the rules of combat. You, that he's challenging him. Why is he running away? He says, you know, are you not, you know, okay, so you're a forest animal, so that's why you're so shameless that you're running away? You know, that kind of the attitude. So here, that therefore you can see underlying the element of piety of following the rules, but they're only interested in following the rules that better their position. They're not interested in following the rules that makes them submissive to higher authority. So that's the point. What we're saying is they'll attack. Someone may say, but some philosophy supports the concept of a supreme being and things like that. But only where it doesn't restrict us. Only where I can get benefit, I can connect, I can expand, you know, where I can get something like that. Does that make sense? And as we were mentioning before, the monotheistic ones, is that they'll say he's a person until it comes down to what I'm supposed to do. Then he's just the supreme. Right? Because if he's a person, then I should be trying to please him. Does that make sense? So therefore, they have both the impersonal and the personal stand. When they want to bring out sentiment, then there's the personal. When they want to deal with other things, then the impersonal. So, it's, you know, you just take the position as is good for your case. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes, "The Mayavadi philosopher cannot understand that the Lord has feelings. The Lord is satisfied if someone offers him a nice prayer. And similarly, if someone decries his existence or calls him by ill names, God is dissatisfied. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is decried by the Mayavadi philosophers, who are almost demons. They say that God has no head, no form, no existence, and no legs, hands, or other bodily limbs." Right, so almost demons, and that they are pious, following Vedic rules and everything like that, but the purpose of it is decrying God's position. So that makes them almost like demons, right? So the effect is this. It's like iron and fire. It's iron, but it acts like fire. In other words, they say that he is dead or lame. All these misconceptions of the Supreme Lord are a source of dissatisfaction to him, right? Because there's no relationship. He is never pleased with such atheistic descriptions. In this case, although the Lord felt sorrow from the piercing words of the demons, he delivered the earth for the satisfaction of the demigods, who are ever his devotees. The conclusion is that God is as sentient as we are. He is satisfied by our prayers and dissatisfied by our harsh words against him. In order to give protection to his devotee, he is always ready to tolerate insulting words from the atheists. Right, so the atheist may say all these things, but you know, so he'll interact with the devotees, so he'll tolerate those. Like that.
Can we say that those demons, they were under Yogamaya or Maharaj? Who was
it? Which demons? These demons. They'll be acting under Yogamaya, because as we learned before, that technically they're in the spiritual forms, right? Just to take part. So Yogamaya is taking care, but the effect that you'll see will be Mahamaya. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So from that side, it will have the same effects and everything as if anybody else does that as Mahamaya. Because it's the same person, but it's being arranged for the personal satisfaction of the Lord. Right?
and also to be as ambitious to try to kill God means he was totally atheistic. In this sense?
Basically, you could say. Because otherwise, then why would you, if you understand who God is, why would you ever think that you could kill him? But it's just like here, you have the ordinary persons, and if you're also one of the ordinary persons, you know, your pride is not that great. Of course, there's always going to be some pride, you know, like that. But if someone has more opulence than the ordinary person, then they automatically become proud. Right, because there's no God consciousness to restrain them. So here you see is they have more prowess than anybody else in the universe, at least in their, you know, capacity, how they're looking at it. You know, others are more powerful, but that's not what they do, you know, like that. So they'll be so proud. So naturally they'll think they can do what they want. It doesn't matter, you know. Does that make sense?
When the Lord was coming out of the water, taking the earth in his arms to deliver it, the demon derided him with insulting words. But the Lord did not care because he was very conscious of his duty. For a dutiful man, there is nothing to fear. Similarly, those who are powerful have no fear of derision or unkind words from an enemy. The Lord had nothing to fear from anyone, yet he was merciful to his enemy by neglecting him. Although apparently he fled from the challenge, it was just to protect the earth from calamity that he tolerated Hiranyaksha's deriding words. Yes?
For a dutiful man, there is nothing to fear.
Yes.
It means they will suffer anyway, according to the karma.
Yes, but you're going to get good results.
Oh, yes.
You know, maybe not now, but later. Is that right? Yeah. You know, so the point is that because the Lord is taking care, then it'll always work out. But because the point is to come closer to him and develop the relationship with him, then it may or may not include the material facilities work out nicely. You know what I'm saying? You know, because we're generally most comfortable with the have your cake and eat it philosophy. We want full spiritual benefit and all the ecstasy is there and all material facility. You know, so, you know, if we had Devahuti's palace and prema, now that would be good. Yeah, okay, bingo. Okay. No? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, that's all we're asking for. We're not asking for two things. Yeah. Okay. Verses 8 to 12. After securing the earth, the Lord expresses his terrible anger. The Lord placed the earth within his sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her his own energy in the form of the ability to float on the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demigods rained flowers on him. Right, so already you're showing the demon something, is that the earth was within the water. And so now he's put it on the water and is floating. Right, so you know who does that, right? And so then that's something special. But at the same time as before, the demon said that you've killed all these other demons because of your mystic powers. You know, it's not that you necessarily have great fighting prowess, but by mysticism, by being invisible, then you can use your tricks, and then it will be, you know, it will have an effect. So then, but at least he knows that the Lord is powerful. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, those who are demons cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead floated the earth on water. But to devotees of the Lord, this is not a very wonderful act. Not only the earth, but many, many millions of planets are floating in the air. And this floating power is endowed upon them by the Lord. There is no other possible explanation. The materialist can explain that the planets are floating by the law of gravitation, but the law of gravitation works under the control and direction of the Supreme Lord. That was the point before, is that they're calling this gravitation, that you have a certain mass and everything, but it's actually the Lord's attractive potency, that everything's attracted to each other. So Sankarsana, that aspect of Sankarsana, he holds everything together. Right, because just like in the element is your philosophy and all that, that's what holds it together. The proper knowledge holds it all together. Right, so that's the yes.
So this all happens when the Lord glances, and then Pradhan turns into Mahat, then the attraction energy.
No, then that's the next stage. Because I mean, it's happening at that time. But remember, is that he's looked at the material energy, and you have Mahat, because that whole thing's called, you know, that whole area is called Mahat Tattva.
Yeah.
But then these primordial demigods are saying they can't do anything because it's not going together. Mm. So then by the Lord's grace, that potency then pulls them all together, then you actually get the universes.
I missed it.
I guess it's coming up.
Okay.
It's a coming attraction.
Okay.
You know, so it's just a further detail of that, what was happening before.
Hmm.
So all this coming together, then you have the universes and all that. Then the Lord enters as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then you have all that going on inside. Then that aspect of universal form is then within the universe. Hmm. But the elements and all those things, those are all happening out before the universe even manifests. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because the universe means it's held together.
Yes.
So it means until the Lord holds it together by his potency of Sankarsana, then it can't actually, you can't get a universe. You have the material elements all separated instead of just being pradhan, but you won't get a universe until they go together. Because the universe is that you have a layer of earth, a layer of fire, a layer like this, so all the atoms are pulled together. And then the universal form will be what are all the blueprint of everything that you can make from that. Right? Then you'll get the because of the living entities, that passion, because all this is going on because of that passion of the living entities, the desire to enjoy. Therefore, there's the glance, therefore, you know, but at the same time, it's mode of ignorance because they're seeing they don't see the connection with the Lord. At the same time, it's the mode of goodness because it's primary creation, so the modes of nature aren't controlling it. So depending on which aspect they want to bring out, then they'll mention the particular mode. Does that make sense? So then because of that power, then the lotus comes out of the navel because it's the desire of the living entities to enjoy. So then that whole form of the universe, where everything's placed, what everything can be done so that everybody can enjoy all the things that they want to enjoy, that's already in the lotus. Now, Brahma just has to make it. Right? It's just like, why is the architect making a design of a house?
Because of the desire of the owner.
Because the desire of the owner. But is it there?
Not yet.
Not yet, but then the engineer makes it. You understand?
Yeah.
So it's the same principle. Is because of the desire of the living entity. Therefore, the blueprint of the universe and the primary creation is generated. And then Brahma, as the secondary creator, manifests it. That's why he's a creator only in that he puts together the elements and design that's already there. You know, so you don't really say that the engineer created the house, you say the architect did. You know, when you see the house built, you don't ask who is the engineer, you ask who's the architect. Is that what I said? So because so all these things are, they're there because that's the original flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So like that. So it's held together at that time. So it's just, we've just heard that he glances and then he enters and then Brahma comes from the navel. So that's the main essential movements of it. But the finer points of the Lord being involved at every stage, that's being introduced through this successive explanation of the creation. Because like now, after this, we'll get back into that creation, because that was the original discussion, was the creation. But then in explaining it, then you get the story of the earth,
And then we got on to Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and then how did that happen? Then you have Vaikuntha and Jayanvijaya and everybody like that. So it keeps coming up again and again. So that's a finer point, is that even the universes can't go together because until the Lord does. So that means Mahavishnu and those primordial demigods, that's involved with that, the first aspects of the creation. And then successive, then you go into Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and then those demigods, and then finally Brahma manifests what we know as the demigods. So it's just, we get used to it, but the essence is like that. He glances, he enters into, the universes are there, he enters into them, then he generates the universal form, Brahma, then manifests it, and then the Lord, as Giridakshay Vishnu, enters into everything. But actually it's the Lord being in everything that holds everything together. So he's holding it together by his potency. And then to control that potency, he, the person, then takes care of that. So
the glance happens with Karanadakshay Vishnu.
Yes, Karanadakshay. So the primary creation is Karanadakshay Vishnu and Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And also, yeah, you could say Kirudakshay, because he enters everything and all that. So all those three, those are all aspects of the primary. Mm-hmm. Then Brahma, that's the secondary. So I think it was, what was it? There were six were primary, and then there were, I think, three or four that were secondary, the Brahma.
Six and three.
Six and three.
Okay.
So in that six, it includes all these things. There's finer and finer points. But the principle of how we basically understand it, the Lord glances, and then all the universes are there, and then that's how it's working. It's just in the steps in between, then there's little fine steps. So they're not actually major things. Because he glances, it's happening. But then because the devotees are involved, therefore then they're praying that they can all work. So in other words, that material energy is not independent of the Lord. There's this idea that it's been created and now it's taken on a life of its own and God can't control it anymore and everything like that. No, it's just, he's the one holding it all together. You know, because I could say fire is God's element, energy. So he still controls fire. So it's not that it's become a separate thing and now God doesn't control the fire anymore. Stone is still his thing. You know what I'm saying? Like that. No?
Yeah.
So it's not that you can have, it gets out of hand, he can't control it, and then somebody else has to control it. If God can't control it, why is it someone else can control it? How does that work? You know? Yeah, it's just like if I say that, people just accept it because that's how our lives work. I start to do something, I lose control, someone else takes over. But that's because I'm not the supreme controller. So that's where the anthropomorphism comes in, is that we project our thing, lifestyle and qualities and thoughts onto God. But actually it's not, it's the other way around. So because we think I'm not the supreme controller, therefore, you know, the gods are there and then their sons, you know, I'm not sure they kill them, eat them, do something weird. And then they're the ones, then their sons come and make trouble for them, and they're always, you know, it's always a riot. You know, like that. Especially the Norse ones. I think the Greek ones, it's a little less wild, but not so much better. You know, so... Yeah, it's interesting. Then the Romans were actually defeated by people with the same religion. Right? The Romans as pagans were defeated by the Norsemen as pagans.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not that there was a change at all in the religion.
Which change came late.
Yeah, that's late. It's just, it was a change in management, that's all. From Italian management to German management, that's all. Yeah. I think they kept the food, right? You know, who's going to go for German food?
What is German
food? German food, we don't want to know. But you could probably start with Limburger cheese. You know. You go a little farther east into the Prussians, then they have a few preps worthwhile, you know.
That is the version of Bhagavad Gita which confirms by the Lord's statement that behind the material laws are nature's laws, and behind the growth, maintenance, production, evolution of all the planetary systems, behind everything is the Lord's direction. Right. So here, material laws, nature's laws, is behind us the Lord. So that means also, if you're trying to explain something, then you can say nature's laws, and it's still within the philosophy. The Lord's activities could be appreciated only by the demigods headed by Brahma. And therefore, when they saw the uncommon prowess of the Lord in keeping the earth on the surface of the water, they showered flowers on him in appreciation of his transcendental activity. Because they can't do that. Right? They can only work within their area. So they can apply this gravity and all these things in their own areas. But here, the Lord's taking the earth and then floating it. You know, so you have something that's quite big, right?
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary to the same verse, "Since the earth is frightened, it is not good that I fight with the demon. Thus the Lord placed the earth on the water within his sight and endowed her with his own energy, so that the earth would not sink in the water. He was praised by Brahma. He was showered completely with flowers by the Prajapatis, while the enemy watched. This indicates that the demon was not respected."
Right? You know, so this is there. He keeps the earth there. He's run away. Now he's insulting him, you know, that he's running away. But then at the same time, he's keeping the earth there. It floats. The demons put it there. It sinks. Right? Then the demigods are praising it, completely covering him in flowers. Like that. And all this, the demon has to watch.
Patient.
Yeah, because he's a big time demon. You know, it's just like this. You go in and walk into the office, you know, if you get into the office of some big, you know, multinational, you know, corporate industrialist or something like that, and you insult them, they'll probably sit there very quietly. But you don't want to know what happens to you once you walk out of his office. Like that. There's a reason there's so many buttons on this phone. Sorry?
Doesn't want to ruin
his furniture. Doesn't ruin his furniture. Yes, of course. Yeah. He wants to make a mess on the phone.
That was important, right?
Yeah.
Maitreya continued, "The demon who had a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body chased the Lord from behind with a great mace. The Lord tolerated his piercing, ill words, but in order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger." Verse 9. The nature of the Lord's anger is expounded upon in Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 7. If they had been real enemies of the Lord, Jayan Vijay would not have brought happiness to the devotees. They brought happiness to devotees because they were friends with many devotees. Therefore, their enmity to the Lord was only the reflection of enmity, an enmity assumed to enable the Lord and other devotees to taste certain rasas. For this, we may assume that the Lord wished to enjoy pastimes of fighting, and to please him, the devotees Jayan Vijay, employing their mystic powers, manifested certain spiritual forms and assumed the role of his enemies. Then, meditating on the Lord as their enemy, they eventually relinquished that role of being the Lord's enemy. Therefore, their being the Lord's enemy was only an external show. This is confirmed by Lord Narayan himself when he told them, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:16:29,
Depart this place, but fear not, all glory is unto you. In its description of the Lord's battle with Hiranyaksha, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.18.9 explains that the Lord was not really angry with Jai and Vijay when they were playing the parts of demons. Quote, the demon, who had a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body, chased the Lord from behind with a great mace. The Lord tolerated his piercing words, but in order to reply to them, he expressed his terrible anger. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, the Lord's terrible anger is here only an external show, a show intended to relieve the fears of the demigods who are frightened by the demons' insults. The Lord did not really become angry by hearing those insults. You know, we're not talking about, you know, a rain of dead birds and then when everybody eats them, they all die. You know, we're not talking about this terrible anger. That makes some sense, that quote? Okay. Yeah? Okay. So, yes? No? No. Yeah. We won't get into it. Yes.
Did they know Lord Hiranyaksha?
Basically. You know, but they, I mean, in one sense, it mentioned before that only the four Kumaras knew. And then, so it may be at that time before. Then when they went to Brahman, he explained the whole pastime and all that. Then they knew. So now they know it's just the Lord's pastime, so it's taking part. So then it's just a matter of then everybody can taste this fight, because they're fighting, but now the Lord's fighting is going to be so much better. Right? You know, it's just like, there's a good chance that most people in the world, let's say it like this, many people in the world would have heard of the, you know, heavyweight boxing championship. Right? But how many have heard of middleweight, lightweight, bantamweight, featherweight? Right? There's guys down to, you know, they're about this tall and weigh about 3 kilos. And they get in there and fight with each other. You know, and there's he's the world featherweight champion of the world, you know, all 12 kilos of it. You know? You ever heard of him? Never, because who cares? Right? You know, like that. So we hear the heavyweights. So that's the whole point, is the demigods are fighting. And then they're going to be impressed seeing the Lord. Now here, now this is the, you know, the universal, you know, heavyweight championship, right? So this is, you know, everybody's going to want a ringside seat for this. Right? So, you know, bring your flowers and, you know. So it's just, it brings out a taste. That's what Jiva Goswami's pointing out. The taste for the Lord, but it's also the taste for the devotees to watch. You know, like that. So it works out nice. Everybody likes. You know, there's two guys out there fighting, and there's a whole stadium full of people watching. You know? And it's about the fight. You know, if the guy comes out and in the first round, in the first 10 seconds, knocks the other guy out, everyone feels they wasted their money. Right? But if they go, you know, 3-5 rounds and all that, then they consider, okay, that was worth the money. Right? So that's why then the Lord, he could kill him immediately, but he doesn't. It takes some time and it goes on. And only when the demigods are sad, so, you know, like that, you should kill him now. You know, okay, we had enough fun, now kill the guy, you know. Then he kills him. Because otherwise, he can go on playing, you know, forever, because it's not a problem for him. He doesn't get tired. He won't lose, you know. Is that kind of thing? Yeah. The Lord's terrible anger here is only an external show, a show intended to relieve the fears of the demigods who are frightened by the demons' insults. So they get frightened. So then he shows his anger, and then they get inspired again. The Lord did not really become angry by hearing those insults, because it's the example is given of, if you take a lotus flower and go up, you know, a lotus flower with a stem, and you go up with all your might and hit the elephant in the side, does the elephant care? He probably won't even turn around and look at you. You know, just keep walking. Yeah, so that's the personality of God had said, indeed, we are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you.
One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk in which you are indulging. For you are bound up by the laws of death, right? So he's saying he's free from the laws of death, right? He is death personified, so why should he be worried? But people like him who are bound up in this now, he should be worried. Footnote 12. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the alternate meaning is as follows. We are seen by the devotees who have given up material enjoyment. Vana gochara means, you know, those who are have given up the material life, they're considered, you know, vanacharis, because they live in the forest, even though they may be in the city, but they're living in the forest of Krishna's, you know, arrangement from that. So, yeah. Mercifully, I search out those who are most prominently attached to material enjoyment to offer them a place with me. But why do you give mercy to proud, sinful persons? Heroes like me are generous and do not feel the faults in your boasting words. What is your position? You become completely free from the ropes of death, since one who receives my mercy is not subject to death. A person from whom no inauspiciousness arises, abhadra. Right, so here is that we are indeed creatures of the jungle, means that we are one who those who are renounced from material life and who have taken up residence in the jungle, they worship him. So that way then he's a resident of the jungle. Right? Yeah. Certainly we have stolen the charge of the inhabitants of Rasatala and have lost all shame. Although bitten by your powerful mace, I shall stay here in the water for some time, because, having created enmity with a powerful enemy, I now have no place to go. Because right, he has to deal with that. So he's going back and forth, playing with him, saying, oh, I've created enmity with you. Now where can I go? Because, you know, there'll be a fight. You'll follow. The same time is that, yes, certainly we've lost all shame, because he says you're a shameless creature for running away. We've lost because we've stolen away. You know, he was saying, because you're going away, but actually it's because he's stolen what they can claim as their property. Right? Is that, yeah. You are supposed to be the commander of many foot soldiers, and now you may take prompt steps to overthrow us. Give up all your foolish talk and wipe out the cares of your kith and kin by slaying us. One may be proud, yet he does not deserve a seat in an assembly if he fails to fulfill his promised word. So if someone says they're going to do something, right, because he said he will kill him. He says, so give up the words, do something. Otherwise, then how are you going to please your family, and how can you say you're a great personality in the assembly if you don't do what you say? Right, so we see is that these discussions are simply to invoke more and more the mood of fighting. Because the better the mood is there, the better the fight. Because it's about the fight. It's not as much about winning. It's about the fight itself. Right? But with the Lord, you know, of course, he's going to win. Like that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives alternate meanings to the Lord's angry response in his purport to verse 12. You, the commander of leaders of the foot soldiers, should immediately act to bring about my defeat without thinking twice. He who does not fulfill his promise is not fit to sit in the assembly. There's another meeting. Filled with prema, you have accepted the mood of a demon as a promise to give me happiness by fighting with me. He who does not keep that promise is unfit to sit in the assembly. Therefore, as commander of the troops, now act to make me happy by fighting. In order to give up your life, after having fixed me in your heart, wipe away your tears of bliss.
So it completely, yeah, changing.
Verse 13 to 19. Hiranyaksha and the Lord strike each other. Hiranyaksha struck the Lord with his mace, and a fierce fight began. Sri Maitreya said, the demon, being thus challenged by the personality of Godhead, became angry and agitated. And he trembled in anger, just like a challenged cobra, hissing indignantly, all his senses shaken by wrath. Because before, he's angry, he wants to fight, but he's not that angry. Right? Because the point is how much of a fight can it be? Because it's the strength is not matched, but you can bring the rasas on the level of the emotion. So he can have a very full mood of anger towards the Lord.
and that whole fighting. So that's where the taste is going to come. Because in technique, we have to remember, technique comes from the Lord. Right? Power comes from the Lord. So that's not the part that's impressive to the Lord. Just like for ourselves, the technique is not what attracts the Lord. It's the mood in which it's done. But we use technique according to our nature. So he's a big demon. He should show some big technique. Right? You know, if he comes out and says, okay, you know, we're going to see, you know, who can win at patty cake here. You know, like that. You know, how quickly you can go before the other one messes up. Then it might not, the demigods might just go back home and, you know, not. No, bad example. Okay. I mean, there must be championships in it. Sure, you know. Every block, you know, it's happening, you know. 8-year-olds are all going for it. Okay. The demon quickly sprang upon the Lord and dealt him a blow with his powerful mace. The Lord, however, by moving slightly aside, dodged the violent mace blow aimed at his breast by the enemy, just as an accomplished yogi would elude death. The personality of Godhead now exhibited his anger and rushed to meet the demon, right? Because he's waiting for him to attack. So he's saying enough for him to get angry. Then he attacks, and then he counters like that. You know, so it's also a technique, because the person who attacks is actually in the weaker position. So. The personality of Godhead now exhibited his anger and rushed to meet the demon, who bit his lip in rage, took up his mace again, and began to repeatedly brandish it about. Then, with his mace, the Lord struck the enemy on the right of his brow. But since the enemy was expert in fighting, O gentle Vidura, he protected himself by a maneuver of his own mace. In this way, the demon Haryaksha and the Lord himself, by a maneuver of his own... The personality of God has struck each other with their huge maces, each enraged and seeking his own victory. There was keen rivalry between the two combatants. Both had sustained injuries on their bodies from the blows of each other's pointed maces, and each grew more and more enraged at the smell of blood on his person. In their eagerness to win, they performed maneuvers of various kinds, and their contest looked like an encounter between two forceful bulls for the sake of a cow. 13-19. Srila Prabhupada in his purport says, the fight between the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the demon is compared to a fight between bulls for the sake of a cow. The earth planet is also called Go, or cow. As bulls fight between themselves to ascertain who will have union with the cow, there is always a constant fight between the demons and the Supreme Lord, or his representative for supremacy over the earth. Here the Lord is significantly described as Yajna Vayava, the personality of Godhead, of whose body Yajna is a part. One should not consider the Lord to have the body of an ordinary boar. He can assume any form, and he possesses all such forms eternally. It is from him that all other forms emanated. This boar form is not to be considered the form of an ordinary hog. His body is actually full of yajna, or worshipable offerings. Yajna, sacrifices, are offered to Vishnu. Yajna means the body of Vishnu. His body is not material, therefore should not be taken. He should not be taken to be an ordinary boar. Because everything's there, because remember before it was described that all the different plates of sacrifice that have different purposes in the various yajnas, then those are all the different parts of his body. So he is sacrifice. Verses 20-28, Brahma addresses Narayana. Brahma arrived and, noting that night was approaching, requested the Lord to kill the demon without delay. O descendant of Kuru, Brahma, the most independent demigod of the universe, accompanied by his followers, came to see the terrible fight for the sake of the world between the demon and the personality of Godhead, who appeared in the form of a boar. After arriving at the place of combat, Brahma, the leader of thousands of sages and transcendentalists, saw the demon, who had attained such unprecedented power that no one could fight with him.
Brahma then addressed Narayana, who was assuming the form of a boar for the first time. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord, this demon has proved to be a constant pinprick to the demigods, the brahmanas, the cows, and innocent persons, who are spotless and always dependent upon worshipping the lotus feet. He has become a source of fear by unnecessarily harassing them. Since he has attained a boon from me, he has become a demon, always searching for a proper combatant, wandering all over the universe for this infamous purpose." Lord Brahma Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, there is no need to play with this serpentine demon, who is always very skilled in conjuring tricks and is arrogant, self-sufficient, and most wicked. My dear Lord, you are infallible. Please kill this sinful demon before the demoniac hour arrives, and he presents another formidable approach favorable to him."
Right, because in the day, they have whatever prowess they have, but at night, their powers, their mystic powers increase, because that's the time for the demoniac power. So they become more powerful at night. So you see, it's a very common thing when you're dealing with the demons, that the those who are not the demons, then they always try to finish everything up before the twilight. Because at the twilight, that's when their power starts. So it comes up a few times like that.
"You can kill him by your internal potency without doubt. My Lord, the darkest evening, which covers the world, is fast approaching. Since you are the soul of all souls, kindly kill him and win victory for the demigods. The auspicious period known as Abhijit, which is most opportune for victory, commenced at midday and has all but passed. Therefore, in the interest of your friends, please dispose of this formidable foe quickly."
So it gives the idea now it's just on the approach of evening, but the fight must have started at Abhijit, because that's the best time for getting something done. Right? It means you can have specific times, but the Abhijit Muhurta means the exact when the sun is exactly straight up. Then that time is auspicious for doing anything. Even if you have a time that doesn't have any good time, then that's always a good time.
So every day.
So it appears that, you know, it means of the day it will be good. It's not that it's necessarily the best in the day, but it's always good. Okay. So it appears that the fight would have started at noon and now has gone till the evening. So they've been having quite a good fight. You know, that's therefore they call it a terrible fight. So they're only mentioning a few of the moves. It's not that that was all there was. No, that was just a few significant ones that you could relate to, because the other ones are all technical ones. So then, like Mahabharata, it will give explanation of all the different moves and stuff like that. You know, and unless you really appreciate it, then it gets quite lengthy.
Yeah, so now up to now he's mentioned that here's this demon, he's always creating problems, he's always bothering those who are, you know, transcendental, devotional, or innocent. You know, and those who worship the Lord. So therefore, you know, this is a reason to get rid of him. And then the other aspect is that now it's the hour is approaching where he'll become more powerful. Not that it's a problem for the Lord, but just then the other devotees and everyone will become more worried. Right? So not wanting for them to be worried, therefore he's performing this pastime.
"Therefore, in the interest of your friends, please dispose of this formidable foe quickly. This demon, lucky for us, has come of his own accord to you, his death ordained by you. Therefore, exhibiting your ways, kill him in the duel and establish the worlds in peace."
Right, because generally it's like Arjuna's mentioning the point, you know, or no, Krishna mentions the point in Gita that the happy is the Kshatriya who a fight comes unasked for. You know, it's not that you have to go looking for a fight, but it's come on its own. So then here's an opportunity to perform your duty. So the Lord's just doing his duty of lifting the earth. But in the meantime, then Hiranyaksha comes and then challenges him to a fight. And because this is the arrangement, then his death is ordained by you, so it's all going to work out. But at the same time, as there is the element of the pastime that they're worried. Right? Like someone like the four Kumaras, they're not worried. Right, because they just function in that capacity of just only appreciating the glories of the Lord, the greatness of the Lord, you know, his power of the Lord. So this isn't going to be a real problem for them so much. But others who then have that element of servitorship, there's the sense of possession, so there's going to be some anxiety. If you appreciate then that you don't have that possession, then you start to worry. It goes deeper. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why at that stage it's neutral. There's technically no rules for it. Only when there's possession, then rules start. And the greater the possession, the more rules. Does that make sense? Yeah. 20 to 28, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states in his purport to verse 25, before his favorable time arrives, when his power increases, and you, though the Supreme Lord cannot kill him, you should kill him. Though Brahma is full of power and knowledge, out of prema he becomes unsteady with apprehension. And so it's basically just a transcendental symptom that he gets worried and anxiety. Right, because otherwise he knows the knowledge, you know, there's no one else in the universe who knows what he knows. But due to his love for the Lord, then he becomes unsteady in that knowledge, and then he speaks in this way. Similarly, though Vasudeva and Devaki are full of power and knowledge, they say, Samudvijay Bhavadhetu Kamshad Aham Adhihi. I am trembling in fear from Kamsa for your safety, even though they've already acknowledged he's the Supreme Lord, controller of everything. But due to their love, now they're worried about this. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.4.9. Just when you're worried, we weren't getting anywhere. Chapter 19, the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha, Pratigya. Hiranyaksha was easily killed when the Lord nonchalantly slapped him on the root of his ear. Seems to be the popular. Also, I think it was Chanur and Mustika, and he kicked them there in the same place. So it seems to be a good spot. The particular of this chapter is expressed in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 26. It does not take even a moment for the Lord to kill any powerful demon, including Hiranyaksha. The Lord could have killed him long before, but he allowed the demon to display the full extent of his magical feats. One may know that by magical feats, by scientific advancement of knowledge, or by material power, one cannot become the equal of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His one signal is sufficient to destroy all our attempts. His inconceivable power, as displayed here, is so strong that the demon, despite all his demoniac maneuvers, was killed by the Lord when the Lord desired, simply by one slap. So it was just when the Lord desired, then that was it. It wasn't that the Lord was having some problem here. You know, like that. It's just he was playing. But because he has so much prowess, he's not going to be satisfied unless he's used all his techniques. So once he's used everything and all that, then he could kill him. Right there. Yeah. It's funny because in Bengali or something, when they're talking about, you know, chastising the person, yeah, I'll give one slap, you know. It's always about one slap. You know, so here, this is where it comes from. Lord gives one slap, and that's it. Riti, a philosophical elaboration upon the Pratigya. The quality of Hiranyaksha's death is noteworthy. Aja, Brahma, and others arrived on the spot to see the fearfully tusked demon lying on the ground, biting his lip. The glow of his face was yet unfaded, and Brahma admiringly said, "Oh, who can meet such blessed death?" 27. Details are explained in Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although the demon was dead, his bodily luster was unfaded. This is very peculiar because when a man or animal is dead, the body immediately becomes pale. The luster gradually fades and decomposition takes place. But here, although Hiranyaksha lay dead, his bodily luster was unfaded because the Lord, the Supreme Spirit, was touching his body. One's bodily luster remains fresh only as long as the spirit soul is present. Although the demon's soul had departed his body, the Supreme Soul touched the body, and therefore his bodily luster did not fade. The individual soul is different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead
when he quits his body is certainly very fortunate. And therefore, personalities like Brahma and the other demigods eulogize the death of the demon. Adhyaya Prakasha. The 19th chapter describes how, after the demon could not kill him by using his illusory powers, the Lord withdrew his weapon and killed him with his hands. Maitreya relates how the Lord accepted the request of Brahma. Laughing, he picked up his club to kill the demon. But Hiranyaksha threw his own club and knocked the Lord's club from his hand. The Lord then called for his chakra and knocked down the mace, which the demon had again thrown. At the demon's second attempt, the Lord caught the mace. Frustrated and humiliated, the demon threw a trident that the Lord's chakra tore to pieces. The demon tried magic, but the Lord dispelled that too with his chakra. Hiranyaksha tried to crush the Lord, but he found the Lord outside his grasp. The Lord then effortlessly and nonchalantly slapped Hiranyaksha at the root of his ear and killed him.
Right, because he goes to grab the Lord, but how do you grab the entire creation? So he goes and grabs, and then the Lord's standing outside. You know? So that was, you know, very bewildering. So now he's tried everything, because now he's going to get down to wrestling. So then that means you've tried, because all the other things are there. He's used his mace, he's used the other weapons he's throwing like this, he's used his magic powers, so all that's left is wrestling. You know, so at this point, since, you know, this isn't, you know, the wrestling match, so now he's run out of technique. Right? So now then the Lord kills him.
Brahma praised the fortune of Hiranyaksha for having died at the Lord's hand, and the demigods showered flowers and offered prayers. Maitreya glorifies the process of hearing the Lord's pastimes and the pastimes of the Lord's devotees. He praises the service of the Lord, the loving master. Maitreya then describes the benefits accrued to one who hears the narration of the Lord's killing of Hiranyaksha. Shloka Anushar.
Because means there's always benefit in hearing, but because it has a specific nature, then there'll be maybe specific qualities that come out of that, or certain purifications. But anything connected to the Lord is always going to give a transcendental benefit. But then there may be, because transcendence has variety, therefore the variety of pastimes, then there's a variety of benefits.
Shloka Anusharanam. In response to Brahma's prayers, the Lord dispatches Hiranyaksha, only after satisfying his fighting spirit. 27-38. Discussions of the glorious death of the demon and the benedictions of the Lord. Now we hear it. Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Sāma Vētā Bhaktivedanta ki, Sāma Vētā Gaura Prima.
Sorry, I had a question on the Vasudev Sattva stage of mind, because this is major part of the 26th chapter.
Major part of the 26th chapter,
Vasudev
Sattva.
Yeah, but Sankhya.
Okay.
So it's not sure. Is it Krishna consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness, or it's material consciousness with the possibility of understanding?
Well, you have both. Vasudev Sattva means that you're on that transcendental platform. But if that's all you have, then we would consider that you're still within the material confines.
Because it appears from Hattattva. It's
yes,
the world.
But at the same time, it's Vasudev Sattva, so it means it's going back to Vasudev, and Vasudev controls the Jnana Shakti, right? So that means it's only on the level of Sat. So they only have that knowledge of transcendence. So for the devotee, it's just the platform on which he performs his devotion. For the others, then, it's the actual platform that they exist in as the neutral position of the soul, as Tathasya Shakti. So you get both, is that all living entities are functioning at that platform. It's just a matter of whether they're under Yogamaya or under Mahamaya when they become active. So for the conditioned living entities, they're in that position of Vasudev Sattva, but it's only a temporary state before they come back into the conditioning.
Right.
Right? So there is they want to enjoy. So the difficulty there is if you're in Vasudev Sattva, even though you're freed from all material contamination, you still have that Purusha Bhav.
Just like after taking a bath in Ganga, you purify your sins, but then
you do again. Have desire. Right, like that. But for the devotees, when they're on Vasudev Sattva, they don't have that false ego. So therefore, it's purely spiritual. So even though the others are situated within spirit, they're not technically fully spiritual. Though it's spiritual, the neutral point, but real spiritual is devotion.
Something like the difference between Mukti and Brahma-Buddha.
That's it. So that position of Vasudeva Sattva, for the materialist, it's Mukti. For the devotee, it's Brahma-Buddha. But it's the same position. So that's why we talk about Vasudeva Sattva in connection with devotees and to the impersonalist and to all the living entities in the creation. Because it covers everybody. It covers the karmis, the jnanis, and the devotees. It's just the karmi, once his conditioning is manifest, he doesn't see the connection with spirit. Right? Or at least not significantly. You know, enough to understand, okay, I perform this body activities that I die and go to heavenly planets, so I have the same soul, will have that connection. But that's all the more. So then that's that level. The jnana, they'll understand they're still Brahman, but they don't understand actually what that Brahman means. You know. But then the devotees understand they're Brahman, but as the Jiva Brahman, they're serving the Supreme Brahman in devotion. So that position, that's what's the name of.
Can we say this is the position of the soul as the Tathasta?
That is the position of Tathasta. That's why when they say you can't fall from the spiritual world, you know, it's like they're taking it that if you're in a material position, you're already fallen. And if you say you're already in Brahma Jyoti, that means you've already been in the material world and now you have the mentality of a jnani, that you're merging with the Lord. So that's also already fallen. So you have to fall from a neutral spiritual state. It's not prema. That's the problem. You say, we're in prema and we fall from that. No, you fall from spiritual. Because for us, we're so nicely trained that spiritual means prema. But there's the secondary meaning where spiritual means just spiritual. It's just neutral. It's not material. It's not devotional. So because of not understanding that subtlety, then devotees get confused. So they either think we came from the material or we came from you know, prema. But it's neither. It's the neutral state. That's why this argument goes on. But it said, no, it's the neutral state, which is spiritual.
Yeah, that's why the pastimes of Krishna we take it. I mean, in Bhama Vrindavan we take it as spiritual world.
Yes, because it's done in devotion. So it's just an extension of Goloka. So they're saying you fell from Goloka. No, you fell from the extension of Goloka. But at the same time, they're non-different. So it is the spiritual world. Because then they'll think, oh, but then we fell from the spiritual world. So that's the whole problem, is there's all these misunderstandings. You know, that spiritual means Goloka and anything else is... You know, so it's just they can't balance it all. Therefore, that's why it's not a topic. If one understands these technical points of the philosophy, then it's something you can appreciate. But you have to know such a wide range of it. So if you understand the wide range of it, then why is it a discussion? You know, the discussion is we became envious of the Lord, therefore we looked upon the Lord's energy in a mood of enjoyment. That's why we're here. But the time and place that we have, that's not important.
It's a detail.
Yes, it's a detail. So it's just, it's a detail that needs too much philosophical, technical knowledge to appreciate. But the other one, that anybody can appreciate. So that's why it's not really a topic for discussion. It's not that we don't understand it, but it's not something we sit around and discuss, well, is it this and is it that? No, because then that's speculation.
Yeah, one purpose Prabhupada says in this chapter, there is no meaning of long discussion on this point.
Yes.
It's coming up in this Sankhya.
Oh, okay, it'll come up. Okay. Yeah, this is no meaning. It's just, it comes up, you make the point, and then that's it. And so you make a point that people can appreciate, and so like that. So ourselves not being so, from such a philosophical background, then it's just, you know, we become envious of Krishna, and so therefore we come here. It works. For those who have a little bit more, you just say, as one fell from Brahman. Then they don't ask any more questions.
They're satisfied.
Yeah, they're satisfied. So both, you know, either you give a more karma answer or a more jnana answer. But the actual spiritual answer, then, you know, it will take... You could say it in a couple of sentences, but to explain it, you know, it needs more. But the other one, you just, no one asked more, so then that's better.
Well, that's why, before starting a discussion, you better clarify the terms, what you mean by spiritual.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And then in that, they don't know, and so then you can't really answer it. Because generally the ones who take it the strongest are the ones that understand the least. You know, or think they understand a lot, one or the other.
Yeah, because if you know more, then you're more aware of complications.
Yeah.